South Park Junior Park Run in Darlington hit by bin mix-up. South Park Junior Park Run, a free weekly 2K event for children held every Sunday at 9 a.m, has lost much of the kit it relies on to operate after a storage issue led to a council mix-up. Event director Pip said the problem began earlier this year when organisers lost access to their usual storage space in the park's clock tower. Since then, they have been working with Darlington Borough Council to secure a lockable storage unit. In the meantime, equipment was being kept in wheelie bins inside a park compound. However, during the past week, one of those bins was mistakenly treated as rubbish and emptied, resulting in the loss of a significant amount of kit. The incident has affected the junior park run, but has also impacted the town's regular 5K Saturday park run. Pip said, "We work really hard as a team to fund and find kit. And losing it, well, it's pretty rubbish." Organisers Rachel and Pip, who help run both events, are now trying to replace the lost items while continuing to deliver the runs. They are appealing for donations from the community to help fund new equipment, although they stressed they understand not everyone is able to contribute. Despite the setback, the team remains determined to keep the popular events going while they seek a more permanent storage solution. Pip added, "If you know anyone at the council, all we want is a shed. We have even bought it." More information about South Park Junior Park Run, including how to donate, can be found on the event's website.
Teesside Hospice and Butterwick Hospice announce merger. Teesside Hospice in Middlesbrough and Butterwick Hospice in Stockton plan to unite in a bid to ensure long-term sustainability of end-of-life care across the North East. The decision, which has been agreed in principle, comes as hospices across the country remain at crisis point, with finances running low and services at risk of being cut. Both hospices continue to face unending financial challenges, spending more money than they are bringing in at a time when demand is increasing year on year. Both Teesside and Butterwick now feel they can generate more income together, with no immediate changes to services. While hospices will now jointly support more than 6,700 people across Teesside and County Durham, the merger has meant that two Butterwick staff now sadly face redundancy. "By making these decisions now, we are protecting ourselves for the future," Mike Thornycroft, CEO of Teesside Hospice, told the Northern Echo. "We would always want to reach more people and deliver outstanding care. Demand is going up year on year, and we want to do more for more people. I think by working together, we can share costs, we can bring more income in, and each hospice is protected by the other's success." Edward Gorringe, CEO of Butterwick Hospice, said the two hospices are stronger together. "They can better serve communities in the future," he said. "We have got strengths in different areas at each hospice. We can hopefully create something taking the best elements of each." The merger, which follows a lengthy decision process, has been agreed to ensure services for those living with life-limiting illnesses and their families will continue. "We are going to work on the basis of a group structure, but both Butterwick Hospice and Teesside Hospice's identities will be remaining. They'll still have separate bank accounts, but we will have one leadership team across both."
Harvey McWilliams Foundation awarded £1,000 by NYSER newsagent. A Darlington charity which supports children across the North East with football kit has been awarded £1,000 through a national foundation. The Harvey McWilliams Foundation was awarded the money by NYSER Edgemoor Road, Darlington, through the Making a Difference Locally, MADL, charity. MADL was founded in 2008 and helps raise money for local communities across the UK through shopping at Nicer and other convenience stores. Co-founder of the Harvey McWilliams Foundation, Michael McWilliams, said the money will be outstanding for the charity. He said it is overwhelming. It is such a large amount of money and outstanding for us because it will help a lot going forward with Kit. It helps us continue the great work we are doing in the community, but it also goes to show we are doing something really positive for people to think of us to receive the money. It goes to show we are doing amazing work as a charity. Michael, 50, co-founded the charity with his son Luke, 20, after his other son Harvey tragically lost his life to suicide at the age of 18 in 2021 when he was a student at the University of Exeter. Michael said the money would be reinvested back into the community. He said, "We have already helped people in Firth Moor and some people know of the charity. The girls in the shop were really nice and accommodating, and one even commented on the work we have done so far." And Michael explained what the money will be spent on. "We have to make sure we have the right amount of kit in," he said. "If we were short on size 5 boots, for example, we would go and buy pairs of boots out of that money, which would then go back into the community." The charity, which will be holding a talk at Firth Moor Community Centre soon, is also embarking on its third For Harvey walk later this month, from Blackwell Meadows to the riverside and back. The theme is Walk and Talk Sport, with anyone joining encouraged to share stories, talk about football and wear the shirt of their favourite team. Michael said, "We want grassroots football teams, neighbours and their friends. We want to see a lot of colours on the walk so people notice what it is we're doing. Sport and football in general were Harvey's love, so we want to see as many different football shirts on the walk as we can."
That concludes news. And now it's time for the magazine. The articles include, "Where are those darn keys? Tricks for remembering where you put things. How I got ahead in advertising. Maureen Lipman turns 80. I went to Sourdough Starter School. Here's everything I learnt. It's going to be death by humus. Plug-in solar panels could transform UK energy habits. I need to declutter my life, but I can't even give my stuff away. It is not always May. Where are those down keys? Tricks for remembering where you put things. A story by Albert Stumman from The Independent. With a scarf dangling from your pocket and those gloves left behind at the coffee shop, there are simply more things to lose these days. It's not counting your misplaced keys at home, or those exasperated moments searching for your phone when you say, "I just had it." Try not to beat yourself up. Even Mark McDaniel, who has been studying human memory and learning for almost 50 years, left a hat under his chair recently at a restaurant. He usually doesn't wear hats, so he forgot it. I should know how to remember, but at the moment you don't think you're going to forget, said McDaniel, Professor Emeritus of Psychological and Brain Sciences at Washington University in St. Louis. Luckily, there are strategies, if you can remember to implement them. Here's how to stop losing things. Daniel L. Schachter, a Harvard University psychology professor and author of The Seven Sins of Memory, said losing things is someone everyone is prone to varying degrees. It depends on life circumstances that pull the mind away from the present. Rather than having a bad memory, it might be a breakdown at the interface of memory and attention, Schachter said. That's what's responsible, based on research, based on personal experience, for a lot of the memory failures that would result in losing things. Memory occurs in three phases in the brain: encoding, storage, and retrieval. Schachter likened losing your keys to drivers who arrive at their destination safely without remembering how they got there. In both cases, the memory of the action is not encoded because people were thinking of something else, which makes it harder to retrieve the memory later. You have to do a little bit of cognitive work, Schachter said. At the time of encoding, you need to focus your attention. For things you use regularly, it helps not have to remember where they are. Schachter suggested identifying problem items such as your phone, wallet or keys, and creating a structure that becomes automatic with practice. He always leaves his reading glasses in a specific spot in the kitchen. When he goes golfing, his phone always goes into the same pocket in his golf bag. Maybe, not always, but, you know, a very high percentage of the time, he said. If there is a noticeable increase in losing things compared to the recent past, accompanied by other memory problems that interfere with your normal function, it might be time to see a doctor, Schachter said. For things you don't use regularly, there is a different strategy. McDaniel said that the brain does a better job at remembering things when it receives several bits of information that can be later connected. Among memory researchers, it is known as elaboration. One way to stop losing objects you don't habitually use, but often lose, like a hat, is to say out loud where you put it when you put it down. Verbalising does two things that help with retrieval. Saying it out loud creates a better encoding because it makes you pay attention, and the verbalisation creates a richer memory, McDaniel said. The more detailed the elaboration, the more connections in the brain there will be to help you remember. An extreme version of elaboration is the memory palace that memory competitors use during championships. To remember a series of numbers and other challenges, they imagine a familiar, structured environment like a house or route, imagining the numbers in particular places. For something like your hat, imagine it in the location and connect it with a reason and a consequence. I put my hat under the chair because I didn't want it to get dirty on the table, but I left it behind last time. You might not remember to grab it when you leave, but you'll probably remember where you left it.
Now from The Oldie, How I Got Ahead in Advertising by Maureen Lipman, who turned 80 on May the 10th. It started with an audition in 1987. Every ethnic actress in England was there. It wasn't a cattle market, but we all knew we were all there. I had never done a commercial before, save one local one, featuring the veteran actress Marjorie Rhodes. Her line was, "Do they deliver round our way?" On the 16th take, she was still saying, "Do they live around our way?" And it became almost impossible to complete the ad without resorting to ventriloquism. This one was big time, with makeup discussions and a wardrobe assistant. I was 41. The character on the script was 70 and felt weightier than me. At the first auditions, I offered to give the team two versions of Grandma Doris. Doris's name changed when I asked them in all innocence why they had not thought to use their own initials, BT, also known as Beatty. I offered to improvise a Northern Nan and a North London Bubba, a Jewish grandmother. The London Gran was making a call, ordering from the kosher butcher. Hello, Lawrence, the actual butcher I ordered my chicken from most Thursdays. I want a medium boiler, cut up into eight, and leave all the kishkas and eight lamb chops. But I don't want any fat. How's your mother's leg? I got the job. We decided that no amount of shading would make my thin little face look older, so a wig and a pair of glasses did the trick. Penny Rose makeup and Wanda wardrobe stuffed my underwear with foam to enlarge my body, and we went for it. The director was Richard Loncrane, known for The Missionary, 1982. He and the creative at the ad agency, J. Walter Thompson, Richard Phillips, a shaven-headed, Ray-Ban clever clogs, were already swapping beady looks. The script, about a grandmother congratulating her grandson on the phone for his, it is revealed, terrible exam results, seemed mildly amusing to me, but it in no way signalled that 30-odd years later, total strangers would still be asking me if I had an ology. The boy was played by Jacob, the son of my friends Bernard and Judith Kruczewski, who grew up with my own children in Muswell Hill. 30-odd years later, he's the principal character of the book This Is Not a Pity Memoir, written by his wife, screenwriter Abby Morgan. To everyone's amazement, the four ads we filmed with new director Tony Scott went the 1980s equivalent of viral, spiral even. Magazines and newspapers couldn't get enough of them. BT were very excited to be less than despised by the public. BT and her family were a bigger hit than Neighbours. BT asked for 8 more films immediately, then 8 more. Then I realised I had no choice in the number they demanded, as my then agent had agreed to a buyout, no repeat fees. So I made 54 commercials in 2 years. No, really. After that, I got the good news and the bad news. Good. I was hot enough to have my own series commissioned, About Face. And bad, I would emerge as not so much a good actress as a good Jewish actress. Whatever I attempted, it was going to be Beatty Does Flamenco, Beatty Does Shakespeare, and even Beatty Goes to Buckingham Palace after I was made a dame in 2020. I think I became a bit ungrateful for my lot. To quieten me down, the agency gave me a telephone box for my garden, which took 10 men to wheel across a lawn. When I moved to a flat, I desperately mourned over having to leave it behind, along with an 8-inch Newtonian reflector and observatory from the same agency and a postbox. Two of the ads took me to an Australia that frankly looked as though a CGI backdrop was involved. The actors, Geoffrey Chiswick, Caroline Quentin and Lionel Haft, became even more famous as Beatty's family. Through a glass darkly, I am full of admiration for the campaign, which did exactly what it said on the tin. It did what it set out to do, change Beatty's image from greedy and remote to warm and accessible, through the auspices of one narky old battle axe. As I have said before, my obituary, after 60-odd years of some fairly decent acting, will read, Beatty, cut off at last.